Welcome to the AFC East Divisional Preview Podcast here at QB List. I am Eric Smith, the former editor-in-chief. Drew DeLuca, our current editor-in-chief, he was off at the Fantasy Football Expo over the weekend, so we're giving him a day or two to kind of recover here. I know it's a big party out there, so Drew's going to get the podcast off, but excellent timing here. We've got some AFC East news, and I have the perfect person here to talk about it. We've got our good old friend Ryan Heath working over at Fantasy Points right now, doing awesome work. Ryan, I've missed talking to you. It was like a weekly thing for the past couple years. So, man, this has been a long time. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Really glad to be back. Excited to get to do a podcast with you again. Just like, it's crazy to say that's like old times, but yeah, it has been a while here.
Yeah, Ryan's an old friend of the pod. He's officially old now, so I'm happy to have him back. But yeah, I don't know. We can kind of wing it here because we're used to doing this. So this is going to be a lot of fun. But like I said, the timing is perfect. AFC East. We've got two veteran running backs signing on the like right before this podcast dropped. So we got a lot to talk about. Let's just kick right into it. We've got the New England Patriots up top, Ryan's favorite team, probably depending on the week that you ask him. But right before we recorded this, they decided to go out and add Ezekiel Elliott at running back. Some of the other additions, they added Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Gesicki, Trace McSorley as a backup quarterback. They drafted some later round skill position players. They also lost Damian Harris, Jacoby Myers, Nelson Aguilar, Jonnu Smith. So a lot of ins and outs on this offense. And then they obviously fixed their biggest problem from last year and had Bill O'Brien at offensive coordinator. So now they have a living, breathing offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of questions on this team. We're obviously going to get to the Ezekiel Elliott signing up top because I think that's primary number one. So what do you think about this backfield, Ryan? We've got Zeke in the mix. We've got Ramondre Stevenson, not a ton else after that. So what do you think the Zeke signing does for the Patriots?
So I'll start this with what I like to call the group chat anecdote. So the reaction in my like college / fantasy football group chat when this happened is because everybody's a Patriots fan is, oh, we got Zeke. And of course, I'm going to be the guy that's like, guys, it's Ezekiel Elliott. This is not like a serious contributor to our team this year, that he's kind of a warm body at this point in his career. And you just hear everyone go, ah, that sucks. And then, of course, 30 minutes later, Dalvin Cook signs and the group chat is up in an uproar. I hate the Jets. I can't believe they got Dalvin Cook. I'm like, guys, it's kind of the same take here. Like we're just getting worked up about stuff in August that is not going to matter that much. But yeah, if you couldn't tell, my take on this backfield is I don't think Zeke affects Ramondre Stevenson in almost any way for fantasy football. I was already just assuming that some running back other than Stevenson was going to get at least a few touches on early downs, maybe even some touches in the goal line. Zeke signing really just tells us that Kevin Harris is awful. That's kind of the only information I think you get out of what the coaches are thinking. So I'm still happy to draft Ramondre where he's been going, and I don't really understand why everybody else on Twitter and in all the group chats is freaking out about it.
Yeah, I'll have a little more on Ramondre Stevenson in our fades and targets section at the bottom of this podcast. But I think it's worth mentioning, like right now, according to Twitter, this deal for Ezekiel Elliott is a 1-year deal up to $6 million. We know how these contracts go, especially for the old running backs, Ryan. Like this could be a $1 million deal with incentives. So the Patriots are not committed to Zeke for any reason. Ramondre Stevenson's still the bell cow here. So I think we can get into that situation a little bit towards the fades and targets. But does that do anything for the rest of the backfield? Like were there running backs you were taking shots on late that you're just kind of out on now that they have Zeke?
I mean, I guess it means Pierre Strong is like dead if you were drafting him round 18 in best balls. I was doing that occasionally. I was never taking Kevin Harris. So yeah, it does. I think that people largely assumed someone was going to sign. I think Zeke was kind of best case scenario for Ramondre. Of the guys who could have signed, he's probably the worst pass catcher, the least explosive at this point in his career. Like if this were Leonard Fournette, I would be singing a slightly different tune today. I'll say that.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll get more to Ramondre later on in the fades and targets. I would say, yeah, I was drafting some Pierre Strong, and bad news for him because Zeke does generally stay on the field. So yeah, he's got a lot more productivity to beat out here going into camp. So, okay. So what was our original big question here for the New England Patriots was more around the passing game. We mentioned Bill O'Brien's here now, a competent offensive coordinator, we hope. What should we expect, Ryan, in New England? Like, is it going to be a lot of 12 personnel? Are any of these receivers, Devontae Parker, Demario Douglas, like Juju Smith-Schuster, is anyone going to stand out from the crowd? Like, is there anything that intrigues you in this passing game, whether it's quarterback or skill positions here?
Not really, if I'm being honest. Like, I think all of these guys could be fine best ball picks just because I do think that the Matt Patricia stank is kind of hanging on to all of these guys' ADPs at the moment. But no, there's not like one guy where I'm like, oh, he's going to command like a serious target share and step up in this offense kind of ahead of everybody else like Jacoby Myers did. So I would expect mostly 12 personnel. I don't think like Kendrick Bourne is going to be a full-time player. He's probably the odd guy out in two receiver sets. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's anything crazy to take account of here. I know Demario Douglas has been getting preseason buzz. He played only a couple snaps in the game the other day, which suggests that he's apparently ahead of Tyquan Thornton on the depth chart, which shouldn't be surprising because Tyquan Thornton was one of the least efficient wide receivers in football last year. His rookie year efficiency, we're in like Diami Brown, Freddie Swain territory. I had to pull some of these up from previous seasons. So don't listen to anybody that has been hyping Tyquan Thornton this summer, I guess. So yeah, I just a long way of saying, no, there's nobody here that I think is really going to emerge.
Yeah, that's actually a good reminder. Ryan and I recorded a sophomore wide receivers to target podcast way earlier in the summer. I think it still holds up pretty well outside of a few signings, but check that one out if you want some more on these sophomore wide receivers. I find myself drafting some Juju Smith-Schuster just as kind of like the last dependable receiver out there where he comes up in drafts, just kind of a safe option. I do find myself kind of intrigued by Hunter Henry if this is a competent offense. He's had some spike touchdown years in the past. And I kind of just don't trust Gesicki to find a role in this offense. Like, I don't know. He doesn't block, right? And like, he's basically a slot receiver. And I think they have better options. So I've been drafting Hunter Henry in like some real deep leagues, not your traditional 12 team home league, but like best ball. I've been taking a few shots on Henry. Am I just wasting a pick there with Henry?
I don't think so at all. I mean, Henry has been going later in best ball drafts than Gesicki has all summer. And I have never quite understood it. He's the incumbent in this offense. He's the one that we know that Mac Jones trusts to some extent. I mean, the last time that the Patriots had a functional offense, which was 2021, Henry led the team with 12 red zone targets. So I would expect something closer to that this year than what we saw last year, where he was not even really playing full time for no one could really explain why. So I really like Henry where he's going.
Okay. Before we move on, do you have any strong Mac Jones takes, or are you just kind of over caring too much about this quarterback situation after Brady?
I am definitely over it. I think I've gone back and forth. I feel like I've been arguing both sides of Mac Jones like way too much the last 2 years. Right now, I feel like I'm a little more on the positive side of the sentiment. Like he's probably not as bad as he looked last year, but I don't think he's like a franchise quarterback that we should be planning to build around. Like this is a team that probably shouldn't be going out and trying really hard to win 8 games.
but they are, Ryan. So
oh, I know they will. Yeah.
They're fighting for every last win. Well, fantasy wise, I do think Mac is way too low. I mean, he's practically quarterback 30 right now. So I like taking him in leagues where, you know, super flex or something, you just need a starter. But yeah, I don't think we should expect a breakout here. So, all right, we'll get to some more Patriots down in targets and fades. But let's get on next to the New York Jets, who right before we recorded, they added Dalvin Cook at running back to kind of muddle up an already crowded running back group here. Obviously, the Jets also added Aaron Rodgers and his friends, Randall Cobb and Alan Lazard. They drafted Izzy Abanaconda in the 5th round, a running back. They lost their backup quarterbacks, Flacco and White. And they also added Mecole Hardman, actually, to the receiver group. Lost some other slot receivers, got rid of Elijah Moore, like kind of a in and out, typical, you know, Aaron Rodgers brings his friends over offseason. So speaking of his friends, the only coaching change here is Nathaniel Hackett coming over from Denver, because that went so well. So it's, you know, they're on hard knocks. It's going to be a circus here in New York, as always. But I think we really need to get into this backfield. Breece Hall was going about RB10 on Sleeper, about ADP 32 overall on Fantasy Pros before Dalvin Cook joined. I'm guessing he's probably going to drop a little bit in the rankings, but where are we at on this Jets backfield, Ryan? Are you panicking if you're drafting Breece Hall, or is it kind of similar to that maybe Patriots backfield we just talked about?
So I'm definitely not drafting him at RB10 anymore. I'll be really interested to see where the ADP settles on this one. But I'll just say that my take on Hall over the last month or so has been, yes, he's a really explosive player. I really like him. Year two running back, lots of reasons to like Breece Hall. But the odds are just way too big that he will be he would have been cheaper and easier to acquire in October than at an RB10 ADP. Whether that'll be true a week from now or not, it will depend on how the market reacts. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm kind of stepping back on Breece Hall at the moment and just seeing where everything falls here. And that's not to say that I'm excited about Dalvin Cook in this offense or anything. His contract, I think, was, again, with the scare quotes, up to like $8.2 million, $8.6 million, something like that. What I would be curious about is what they told Cook that his role was going to be like, because my understanding is that part of the reason he was kind of slow to sign wasn't just the money, but also he wants to be a starter. Of course he would. If you're Dalvin Cook, that's all you've done your entire career, you've been the starter bell cow. I can understand coming into negotiations with the team and I'm saying, yeah, we could really use you for like the first month of the season while Hall gets up to speed, and that being like a bit of an ego hit. So yeah, I'm really just kind of curious like what the dynamics are there as far as what's being promised and what's being told to different guys. But yeah, overall, I'm just kind of staying away from the backfield unless Hall starts falling multiple rounds below where he's currently going.
Yeah, according to Adam Schefter, Dalvin Cook's at least a week away from being able to practice after undergoing shoulder surgery in February. So he's not even back on the field yet, obviously, because he just signed. But like, he's not even ready to start practicing day one. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear from the Jets side of things, like they're Super Bowl or bust with Aaron Rodgers now. They're just loading up as much depth as they can. It makes sense. Just get as many bodies in there. But from a fantasy perspective, it's pretty crowded. Breece Hall, Dalvin Cook, Michael Carter, Zonovan Bam Knight. They drafted Izzy Abanaconda in the fifth round. So we were talking with some Jets fans in the Discord, Matthew Cava, a couple others. It seems like it's either Michael Carter or Bam Knight most likely to get cut here. Bam Knight, he is contract-wise, there's no dead money if they cut Knight. So it's only like $400,000 dead money if they cut Carter. So I don't know if it's a big difference, but there's a chance one of them gets cut here. But it's a pretty crowded backfield. I've just always worried with Breece Hall that, you know, the nearly five targets a game last year was super encouraging. But coming off of an ACL, is he going to get this workhorse role all season long? I don't think that's the case. So he may be one that peaks come fantasy playoff time. And, you know, if you survive the first couple months, it's really going to bail you out. But yeah, Ryan, I don't know. I'm also worried at Breece Hall at this ADP. Maybe he finally drops enough now, though. But Dalvin Cook, I think there's at least a debate that he's not as washed as Ezekiel Elliott is. So he could be a little bit of an issue here. I don't know. I think I'm more worried about Cook than I am Zeke overall.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And Cook has the better three down skill set overall as well. And yeah, on the back of the depth chart, guys, I don't know if any team like hates their own player more than the Jets hate Michael Carter. It's just the vibes on the Jets and Michael Carter have been so awful ever, like after his rookie year. Essentially, they've made every attempt to replace him. They've been really frustrated that I think from their perspective, he hasn't been able to stay on the field very well. They don't think he's very dependable. So I wouldn't be shocked if it is Carter that's getting cut over Knight. I think with Knight, they know they can get, if they really need to, they can give him 15, 16 carries and he's going to do what he needs and hold up. Knight was just a funny stat about Bam Knight is he, I believe, led the league in missed tackles forced per touch if you bring like the touch minimum down low enough. But he did not get like any yards after contact at all. Usually those two things are correlated, but Knight just breaks tackles but doesn't go anywhere. He does like he's the extreme ultimate version of David Montgomery, where he just doesn't have the explosiveness to take advantage of the tackles he breaks.
Yeah, I think that was like Mike Davis too, right? I think he had a season like that. But yeah, that checks out. Okay, well, I don't know how much we're going to hit on them down in the fades and targets. So do you have any strong stances on Aaron Rodgers or Garrett Wilson or anyone here? Or, I mean, I think where Rodgers is going at QB 16, like it's hard to argue with that pick. So I generally take a quarterback before then. But yeah, I think he's got upside. Garrett Wilson has upside. I think those two should be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I do really like Rodgers this year. I'll make the case a little bit more later in the podcast. But yeah, I think we can leave it there for now.
Okay. Well, let's get to the Buffalo Bills, who I guess kind of were stealing headlines earlier in the offseason, but it's quieted down a bit lately. But notable additions for the Bills, they brought on Damian Harris and Latavius Murray at running back. So just pure excitement here in the Buffalo backfield. Deonte Hardy at wide receiver, Trent Sherfield at wide receiver. Also drafted Dalton Kincaid in the first round, Justin Shorter in the fourth round. They did lose Devin Singletary, Cole Beasley, Jamison Crowder, Isaiah McKenzie. So a lot of short options there out of this passing game. Coaching's back. They did get rid of their defensive coordinator, but, you know, their head coach is basically a defense coordinator. So I think they'll be okay with McDermott. So for this Bills offense, the big question here, like we know what Diggs is. We know what Josh Allen is. Who are we targeting in the rest of this offense? I mean, we got Gabe Davis and the, you know, going around pick 100 this year after the hype last year. We've got Dalton Kincaid, who's the tight end 13 on sleeper. Any deeper options? There's been a lot of James Cook hype lately. Like, what are your takes on the secondary and third options in this Bills offense?
So I kind of get it with Gabe Davis this year. I didn't think I'd be saying this, but at his much, much lower cost, you can tell yourself the story that the high ankle sprain he had early last year really affected him. That's what the organization seems to think. It's not like they've gone out and tried to sign like a secondary wide receiver option. They've been much more concerned about signing tight ends and pass catching running backs over the last couple years. They seem really comfortable with Gabe Davis. And again, in the Bills offense, there's always the chance he could run hot on touchdowns. I don't super love him, but funny enough, Scott Barrett is literally forcing me to write a blurb hyping up Gabe Davis. So that'll probably be out in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned to Fantasy Points for that. If you want to read the most tortured blurb I'll probably ever write in my fantasy career, because I've just been such a Gabe Davis hater for years.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I did like Khalil Shakir until this last preseason game. It seems like Deonte Hardy is ahead of him as the Bills' slot wide receiver. Hardy is a former All Division II, All NE10 like superstar. It holds like all of the yardage records, return records in the conference that I went to college in a tiny liberal arts school in New Hampshire was my college. So that if that tells you anything about that competition, but I mean, he's made his way up into the league. It seems like the Bills like him. And if you have an every down role on the Bills offense, I think you're at least in flyer territory at the end of best ball drafts. So it's probably Deonte Hardy that we should be taking those tiny little flyers on as opposed to Khalil Shakir.
Yeah, he's, again, if you flop like that as a rookie wide receiver, it's really hard to overcome it. So I think Gabe Davis for me is kind of the classic, like, if he falls in your draft, then yeah, scoop him up. I'm not exactly running out to get him, but there's a lot of big play potential there, and maybe a healthy arm out of Josh Allen. He connects on more of those. I mean, he saw, you know, healthy, you know, over six targets per game last year. So Davis was better than, you know, most people remember. It's just, he was going in what, the fourth, fifth round, wherever he was going. It hurts a lot more when you get a season like that. So yeah, I don't mind Davis. I don't know. I'll save some of my thoughts on Dalton Kincaid for later, but like James Cook, I don't know if you're saving him or not, Ryan, at running back. He feels like a player that I want to be in on, but I find myself fading him. I think it's just because we didn't see much usage last year. He only had a few games where he was over a 40% snap share. Like, do we really think this is going to change year two for James Cook when there are some options, although they are boring in the backfield?
I mean, I do think it's going to change for James Cook. And it's not just me that thinks that. It is almost everything we've heard out of the Bills organization for the last 6 months. The GM was talking James Cook up all the way back at the combine, saying they think he can be an every down player that gets the majority of the touches. Josh Allen was saying the same thing a few weeks ago. James Cook himself was saying he expects to be the clear RB1. Just the vibes are incredible on James Cook. And I understand that he has historically, even going back to college, not commanded any big shares in his backfield. But I mean, even at Georgia, he was competing with Zamir White, who is another NFL caliber talent. He has posted some really insane receiving stats from an efficiency standpoint, both in college and last year, top 12 in yards per out run. I really, really like James Cook. Even if you don't think he's going to get all that much goal line work, his ADP is like RB30 right now. It's very, very easy to project him for just kind of a slim-ish majority, 55-60% snap share, get basically all of the routes out of the backfield. That's easily like a mid-range RB2. He's a clear value to me. And if he is like this ascendant receiving talent, like an Alvin Kamara or like a rookie year Christian McCaffrey, I think there's a world where he pushes into like low end RB1 territory. So James Cook, I think I'm going to have more of him than any other running back this year in my portfolio. So yeah, I'm taking a very, very strong stance on James Cook.
Okay, maybe I need to rethink him. I guess I just worry. It's kind of like, where was all this hype on him last year from the coaching staff? And I just hope it's not one of those things where he gets on the field and he fails at the things that coaches hate to see running backs fail on. He misses a block, whatever, runs the wrong route, and then all of a sudden he's in the doghouse. I'm not saying there's any reason for that to happen, but there wasn't a lot of passing game production last year. I mean, I'm sure if you look at it on an efficiency basis, it's not bad, but I mean, he only caught more than two balls in two games last year. So I don't know. I hope it does turn around. I hope you're right. I definitely need to draft more of him, but I just kind of wonder where his ceiling really is.
Yeah, I mean, there was an interesting concept that J.J. Zacharyson covered in his late round draft guide this year, which is that running backs in like the middle rounds, it was probably like rounds 3 through 8 or something like that, who basically in those rounds, the less of a share of their backfield they had the year previous, the more likely they actually are to exceed ADP or to break out. And the reason for that is because we know less about them. A lot of what goes on at the running back position when these guys are getting priced at ADP is, okay, like, I know that this guy has had this volume before and I know that he can do this, so I'm going to draft him over the guy that I don't know. I think at like a psychological level, I think this happens a lot. And that's what creates these sort of upside scenarios where, okay, we didn't know as much about James Cook, but if it turns out he's really awesome, his coaching staff seems to think he's really awesome, it just can turn into asymmetrical upside where that's the type of player that matters in fantasy football. There's only a handful of players that actually matter in fantasy football every single year. I think James Cook can be one of those, but I don't think like, who am I going to pick on? Who's a really good example? I don't think like a Najee Harris can be that this year.
Yep, I would agree with the Najee part. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's worth noting, too, Damian Harris kind of been playing through some knee pain. They've been holding him out of the preseason opener. So, yeah, it's an injured Damian Harris and Latavius Murray fighting with him. Nyheim Hines is already hurt for the year. They obviously moved on from Devin Singletary. So, yeah, maybe it's time to start drafting more James Cook, although I wouldn't be surprised if his ADP starts to rise. But definitely an offense worth buying in here. So, all right, let's move on to the Miami Dolphins. I don't know. This is almost an easy team to talk about. There's only so many options here. They kind of made some volume additions here in the offseason. Mike White is the backup quarterback, which could matter. Braxton Berrios, Chosen Anderson at wide receiver, Tyler Kroft, Eric Saubert at tight end. They drafted Devon Achane in the third round out of Texas A&M for a running back. Elijah Higgins at tight end. So those are their additions. They lost Teddy Bridgewater, Trent Sherfield, Mike Gesicki, and Hunter Long. Coaching, they had Vic Fangio on defense, which is a huge pickup. Should shore up that defense a little bit. They obviously already have an injured Jalen Ramsey, but he will be coming back eventually. So the big question here for the Dolphins, Ryan, explain the difference between the ADP on the pass catchers in this offense, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and the difference between Tua. Waddle and Hill going real early, Tua's QB 11. Are we missing something here? Does Tua need to go up? What are your thoughts on this offense as a whole?
I am a Tua apologist this year. I do think Tua should probably be getting drafted a little bit higher. So let me just kind of take you through this, and we can reminisce a little bit, Eric, about what this whole saga last year. So Tua was concussed in week 3, played through it, only attempted 8 passes after that. Week 4, the thing everyone remembers happened. He had the fencing response. He got stretchered off the field. And then in week 16, he was most likely concussed a third time just before halftime, played through the rest of the game, threw like 3 interceptions, was obviously very affected by it, went in concussion protocol after the game. So we've got like 3 games last year where Tua was either likely or confirmed concussed. And he was clearly negatively affected by this in his play and in his decision making. There was maybe his first game back from the second concussion, if you can keep track of that. He was pulled fairly early just because the score wasn't close. And I'm sure they were trying to be really careful with him. So didn't play all that many snaps. So if you take out any game where Tua was concussed and any game where he played less than a 90% snap share, he averaged nearly 22 fantasy points per game and would have ranked as the QB5 last season. And if you look at fantasy points per dropback, he was also the QB5 behind only Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, Justin Fields, and Lamar Jackson. So I think there's really, really good per game upside with Tua here. So that, again, and I'm the upside guy. That's a guy I want to take a stance on, especially in best ball. If I'm drafting 2 quarterbacks, I love having Tua be one of them. Even in single quarterback managed redraft leagues, I think Tua is a totally viable target. The difference between Tua in his healthy games and like Joe Burrow was that Joe Burrow runs when they're near the goal line. And yeah, that does matter. Yeah. But Joe Burrow is going as the QB4 or the QB5 off the board right now. If Burrow has an injury history, if he gets knocked up in week 3, he's probably going to stop doing that. So I just like that comparison. Number one, because it makes Bengals and Dolphins fans really mad. But number two, because I think it demonstrates kind of the fragility of how we view these guys, where most of what they're doing is passing as opposed to rushing, that a few things can break differently and we can be viewing these guys radically different in terms of ADP the year after.
Yeah, I'm torn on this one. Spoiler alert, but he's actually going to be my fade at quarterback, and I think it's Ryan's target here. So we're kind of on opposite ends of Tua. I'm hesitant to be too against him at his ADP and in a single quarterback league where if he does get hurt, it's pretty easy to replace him. So there's a part of me that doesn't want to fade him because of that. But I don't know. He's going about QB10 around pick 90. I mean, I just look at some of the options below him later in ADP. I mean, you can get Aaron Rodgers, Daniel Jones, Anthony Richardson. Like, there's still some fun options down there in a single quarterback league that also are risky, but you can replace them. So that's part of the reason I'm not drafting him. I kind of tend to either draft like the top to like Justin Herbert or then kind of wait. And then I think every hit's going to be under a microscope this season, Ryan. Like, every concussion is going to be treated seriously, but with Tua, I don't know. Like, it's, if he gets a concussion, how many games is he going to miss? Like, you could say that for anyone, but I just really worry about that part of things. He doesn't have the rushing ability, which you already touched on. That's not everything, but I don't know. I worry, is the supreme volume in the passing game going to be there? Is he going to stand up to the hits? Is he going to make it through the season? But again, I do kind of push back on myself, just that in a single quarterback league, if you miss three games from Tua, it's not the end of the world. You can put someone else in there. So I'm a little torn on it. I do agree, in best ball, like, yeah, stack them with Hill, stack them with Waddle. Just when it comes to single quarterback leagues, I think I'm going to either go early or later, if that makes any sense. I think he's at the top of his tier, and that generally means a quarterback. I'm just going to kind of wait for the end of that tier.
Yeah, and I mean, I like that tier too. Like, all three of those names you just listed off, I am drafting, and I do like. Yeah. But yeah, and the, I guess, sure, the difference again is like, I'm drafting too many best ball teams. I'm not even going to tell you how many. I'm trying to get shares of all of these players. But I mean, yeah, I can understand if you're just sitting in like a couple drafts in your home league and your office league, and you look at Tua and you'd rather wait for Aaron Rodgers. I think that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. I'm putting you on a little on the spot here, but I mean, I don't know. We obviously love Tyreek and Waddle. Do any of these running backs do anything for you? Are you just kind of taking a shotgun approach and just drafting whoever falls in whichever draft, or is this just going to be more of the same from last year?
So I have bad vibes on A-Chain right now. Just everything they say about him is like, oh, he's a weapon. Like, we're gonna use him in lots of different ways, and that to me rings alarm bells of like, they don't know how to use him. He's gonna get a few gadget plays every game, at least at the start of the season. So I don't love A-Chain where he's going as the highest Dolphins running back in ADP. Now, of course, they are probably all going to increase now that Dalvin Cook has signed with the Jets and Ezekiel Elliott has signed with the Patriots. I would imagine all Dolphin running backs will see an increase in ADP. If I had to pick one out that I like, it honestly, it's Jeff Wilson. There were times where Wilson was like a usable RB2 last year. There were times when Mostert was as well, but they went out and traded for Wilson. He was the one that was kind of doing it the most recently. So, and he's the cheapest currently. So if I'm taking a shot in the backfield, it is on Jeff Wilson. But I mean, yeah, ultimately these are probably just, these mostly matter for like best ball drafts. I don't think you need to leave your managed league draft with a Dolphin or anything, with a Dolphin backfield member.
Yeah, I feel like I'm missing out by not drafting one of these guys, but I've not found myself drafting them either. A-Chain just goes a little too early for me, and I agree with you. I don't know that the workload is going to be there. So this is an offensive line that PFF has ranked 20th overall, and that's with Teron Armstead in there, who's had a hard time staying on the field. So yeah, I kind of think it's more of the same in this offense going forward. But I mean, Mike McDaniel has been an awesome run game coordinator in the past, so it wouldn't shock me if this running game breaks out, and maybe that's enough reason right there to just pick him up and, you know, be ready to cut him after a couple of weeks. I don't know. I hate not taking a stance on one of these running backs, but it's just tough to pick one out right now.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's just kind of the Dolphins offense, how it's structured. It's just so concentrated around Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle that I think, like you said it at the top of this section, that it's almost just an easy team that doesn't need that much analysis. Like, we don't really even need to discuss a third receiver option. The backfield is kind of whatever. I just don't see that much opportunity.
Yep. All right. Well, that goes through the division. Let's get onto our fades and targets for this division. So we're keeping only with the AFC East here. Ryan, you're up first on the QB targets. Did we take everything you wanted to say? Is it Tua for your target here?
No, I mean, I was going to save the rest of my Tua stats for when you start talking him down, Eric. So my perfect. Yeah. So my QB target is actually going to be Aaron Rodgers. Okay. So if you just erase 2022. Forget about last year. From 2020 through 2021, Aaron Rodgers was the QB5 in fantasy points per game over that 2-year sample, over 22 fantasy points per game, only behind like Allen, Deshaun Watson, Mahomes, and Kyler Murray, right? So what do those seasons have in common? Those were the last two seasons he played with a healthy thumb. He broke the thumb on his throwing hand in, I think, week 3, week 5 last year, probably affected him to some degree. It was the last 2 years that he played with Nathaniel Hackett at offensive coordinator. I understand that's not supposed to be a positive, but if Nathaniel Hackett at OC really just means Aaron Rodgers gets to do what he wants and he's happy and he's not causing waves, then that's probably a good thing, okay? Also, notably in those seasons, back-to-back MVP awards. Like, Aaron Rodgers was really good being talked about as like this crazy resurgence towards the end of his career. If you just rewind back to 2021, that was the narrative here. And then I, of course, have to mention that this period was right after the first time he tried ayahuasca. So I think that I'm not saying that is what caused him to see this resurgence, but it's completely possible. I know he was in like a dark room retreat or something for a while this offseason before signing with the Jets. So if Aaron Rodgers has to go do weird stuff to be good in fantasy football, that's completely fine with me. I'll draft him every time. Like we can talk ourselves through that. But even also last year, it's not as if Rodgers like completely lost his touch or anything of the sort. According to fantasy points data, he was 7th best among all quarterbacks in deep ball accuracy, but in yards per attempt on deep throws, he was just 30th. The translation of that is he was still really accurate, but didn't have anyone that could really catch the ball. A lot of Romeo Doubs drops, a lot of Alan Lazard drops. Christian Watson obviously was coming on at the end of the season, but that's not going to be enough to completely save all of Rodgers' efficiency stats over the full year. So As I said, I really like Rodgers this year. There is genuine QB1 upside. You can get him fairly late. So I think he's just a very solid ADP value. He can be a fallback option if you kind of miss out on like the Tuas or the Anthony Richardsons or the Daniel Jones or that tier of guys.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, there's really no way to push back on him. Like underdog, it's QB16. At Fantasy Pros, it says QB12. I imagine in some home leagues, he's going to be up around that range. But even there, I think it's pretty, the downside's baked in at that price. So I think we're getting some upside by drafting him. His touchdown rate was down last year. That, you know, has typically been high for Rodgers. I will say, if you want to kind of go, actually, there's kind of two sides of the narrative here. You could be getting angry revenge Aaron Rodgers season, which just lights up the scoreboard all season. I do worry a little bit, like good defense, tough division, good defenses, cold weather games, like that pumps the brakes a little bit. I mean, he's used to it. He played in Green Bay, but that's the only thing that makes me hesitate on Rodgers. I really wish he was in a dome here. We could just get some a dome with a bad defense, kind of late career Matt Rodgers or Matt Ryan, excuse me. That's kind of what I wish we had for Rodgers. But no, I'm with you where he's going. He's a good value. So, okay, let's get on to my target at running back. We already talked about him a good bit, but it's Ramondre Stevenson. I've been drafting him a pretty good amount even before the Zeke signing, and now I'm kind of hoping this is just going to drop him down the rankings a little bit and I can draft him even more. You've been able to get Ramondre in the, I think, third round typically. I think that's a good spot for him. If you are looking for a bell cow, that's what he basically was last year, and I think people are sleeping on him a little. Even with Zeke coming in, like, he's replacing 123 touches from Damian Harris last year. And even with that, Ramondre Stevenson was RB11 in PPR points per game. So that was a really miserable offense in New England last year. He only scored 6 touchdowns and he was still an RB1. So I don't know. I think with a real offensive coordinator, I think that's enough to ease these Zeke concerns. I'll definitely buy the dip here for Stevenson. Like, I get it. He did have some like 90% snap share games last year. That's probably not going to happen again. They've talked about they don't want that to happen with Stevenson, but he's a young running back. He catches passes. Like, we can't be that picky at running back, Ryan. Like, if you want to take one in the first 3 rounds, like, he's one of your better options.
I agree completely. Yeah. If I just look at some of these running backs that are being drafted in round two and round three, like if Ezekiel Elliott is like the concern of this for this guy, like that's pretty good compared to guys that could be holding out, for example. Like those situations scare me a lot more, especially if they quiet quit later in the year. We could see that happening with Jonathan Taylor or Josh Jacobs 100%. So yeah, the only thing I really have to add is that Stevenson was really good last year, fringe RB1, and he did that with only scoring at the goal line twice the entire season. So even if Zeke does come in and take 60% of the goal line work, I don't think that is reason to want to have Ramondre lower than he's currently being drafted. So yeah, I really like him. He might break my exposure record if he is actually going to drop into like the fourth round. So yeah, we'll probably be getting even more of him in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I've got him at 5.2 targets per game last year. I mean, that's more than Saquon's had the last 3 years. So it's a really good number. That would be the scary part for me is if for some reason Ezekiel Elliott's such a good pass blocker, you see in passing game work. But I can't imagine that happens. So I'm in on Ramondre Stevenson. Sounds like Ryan is too. He talked a lot about James Cook as a target up in the Bills section. Actually, I think most of these running backs were generally in on. So there's some good ones in this division. So let's get on to my target at wide receiver. Like, we could talk about any of these guys, Ryan, like Tyreek, Waddle, Diggs, Garrett Wilson. They're all targets. Those are just too easy. They're at the top of the drafts. So I want to go a little deeper down here. So I find myself drafting Juju Smith-Schuster quite a bit. He's going as the wide receiver 54. Like, basically, by the time he comes up, there's not much left at receiver. If you took a bunch of risks at the position in a best ball league and you got a bunch of rookies or second year players and you need a little stability, I think Juju's a really good kind of depth piece here to draft late in drafts. He's replacing 7 targets per game last couple years from Jacoby Myers, who left for the Raiders. I know we don't like to just give someone the targets when someone leaves an offense, Ryan, but Jacoby Myers and Juju Smith-Schuster seem like pretty much one-for-one replacements here. So I think we can see a lot of volume for Juju. I am down on the rest of the receiving core. So somebody's got to catch passes here, improved offense. I could see a lot of checkdowns to short passes to Juju. For some reason, I still don't understand why they went out and replaced Jacoby Myers with Juju Smith-Schuster, but they did it. So I'm going to keep drafting them.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think they are going to function very similarly. And yeah, if you are at a point in like a best ball draft, or I guess even a managed league draft where you're thin at receiver and you just need to lock in like 90 to 100 targets, if the guy stays healthy, then yeah, Juju's completely fine for that. And I'm with you on why did they go out and replace him with Juju though? Like, what was the point? I think the contracts were almost the exact same, except Jacoby had like an extra year on it or something. It's like, was that really that bit? And was that really the sticking point? Like to not keep your guy at like where you drafted him? I don't know. But
they may have just rage cut him after that lateral against the Raiders. You know, it's like the day we can get rid of him, he's out of here. We're replacing him. I don't know. You brought up Joe Burrow getting hurt, so I had to bring up the lateral against the Raiders.
That's fair. Yeah. I wonder if at that point Josh McDaniels is like licking his chops, like, ooh, we might get to sign Jacoby Myers this offseason after that. Oh, yeah.
He was absolutely thrilled about that. So he'll be, yeah, catching dump downs that should be going to Devontae Adams.
Right? Yeah.
All right, Ryan, who are you targeting at the tight end position here in this division?
Just by process of elimination, it's Hunter Henry. I'm not going to say it's Tyler Conklin as much as Eric probably wants me to say it's Tyler Conklin. Not honestly, not that the take would even be that different. But there's no tight end on the Dolphins to target, and no. I'm not going to spoil the tight end fade, but I think we're in agreement on that one. So yeah, it's Hunter Henry. Mike Gesicki left practice today. I don't think we know anything about it yet besides it being like an arm or an upper body injury, but I just don't see Gesicki sticking around in this. Like, they're going to be playing fairly different positions anyway. Gesicki will almost never be in line unless I'm giving Bill O'Brien like way too much credit, but I just like Henry to be maybe the best pass catcher on the team, aside from Ramondre Stevenson. Like, that's in the range of outcomes that he leads the team in targets. Like, I could totally see that happening. Could definitely lead the team in end zone targets again, like I said he did in 2021. There's just not a whole lot to say. Really good tight end three at the end of a best ball draft. But again, like, not somebody you have to draft in a managed league unless you want to roster two tight ends for some reason.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Probably don't need to draft Henry in a regular 12-team league. Same with Tyler Conklin, I do think. It wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world if Aaron Rodgers threw a bunch of touchdowns to Conklin. So, yeah, Henry and Conklin are two I'm targeting in best ball as well late in drafts. So, it's kind of at that position. I either take one early or I'm just getting a bunch of those guys at the end. So, yeah, okay. Let's get on to the all-fade team, players we are fading from this division at ADP. I don't even want to go through the Tua thing now because we've talked about him so much. Tua is my choice for the fade team, but we can't fade Mac Jones. He's quarterback 30, 32 in drafts. I'm not going to fade Josh Allen. Aaron Rodgers is a good price. Like, so it kind of process elimination is Tua for me. So I went through a lot of the reasons why I would fade him up in the Dolphins section. Ryan also gave a bunch of good reasons why he's worth it. I'd say he's a real boom bust player. Health is mainly the bust outcome here, but I totally get being in on him. I will say after that, like 470 yard, 6 touchdown game in week 2, then he hit the concussions, came back and was maxed out about 36 passing attempts per game. You could kind of tell they dialed it back a little bit. Part of that was because the offense is so efficient. I mean, if you're completing 80 yard passes, there's only so many passes you can throw in a game. But I don't know. I just worry they're going to try to take care of him a little more here. The health. And then, like I mentioned above, just some options lower in the tier, like Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones, even Dak, you can get after him sometimes. So that's my main pushback on Tua. I think Ryan did a good job arguing against that already. So let's go up to the Dolphins part if you missed it for more Tua talk. But we don't want to anger the rest of the Dolphins fans who are still sticking around at this point. So who are you fading at running back, Ryan? This one was a little trickier for me, but maybe you picked out some low-hanging fruit here.
Yeah, I mean, it is the low-hanging fruit, and I feel like we've kind of circled the drain on him already. It is Breece Hall. If I'm just saying his ADP is RB10, then yeah, I'm fading that. But I mean, honestly, since we talked about all the downsides so much up top, I'm like inclined to talk him up a little bit now. So yeah. I guess I'll do that. Yeah, I'm fading him at RB10, but it maybe later in the season if you're trying to acquire Breece Hall. This is why you might consider it. So among running backs, he was 2nd in yards per out run, ranked 1st in missed tackles forced per reception, and somehow he ranked 1st in total air yards among all running backs last year, despite only playing 5 or 6 games. I don't really know how that happened. A lot of it was probably on one wheel route from Joe Flacco early in the year, but kind of a funny little stat there. I get like the ACL concern, and to be fair, pretty much no running back has ever not been a bust at ADP in recent memory the year after an ACL tear. I know Edwin Porras is out there kind of fuming right now because he's injury expert at Fantasy Points, and his take all offseason has been like, yes, the ACL trends are bad. I think Breece Hall is the young, very athletic guy that can break that trend. With Dalvin Cook coming in, that seems unlikely at this point. But yeah, I mean, Breece Hall is just supremely talented. He's the type of player that you would want to take a shot on at a decent cost, but I just wouldn't expect his best games to come until November or December.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, he had almost 4.5 targets per game last year. That's pretty awesome. That's actually kind of similar to Aaron Jones. I mean, it wouldn't be that much of a stretch to see him as the Aaron Jones in this offense with Aaron Rodgers, you know? I mean, Jones was getting it done on 60% of the snaps. So there's just, it's a long season. There's a lot of touches you need to draft a running back that high. Injuries can pop up, like all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of a bummer to fade Breece Hall because I loved what he did last year. I'm just generally not drafting him, but I'm there with you. If he drops a couple spots in ADP, a couple, you know, RB positions here, I'll be scooping him up because there is a lot of upside. And I do think that there's going to be a healthy amount of running the ball and passing to the running backs here. So this is a good spot for him. And if he can survive this year, Dynasty is, he's going to be looking really good the following year in Dynasty. So love Breece Hall, but he would probably be my fade. I would maybe throw out Damian Harris as a fade. I've seen some Latavius Murray hype recently, and Damian Harris is hurt. So that's probably not a great sign for him in Buffalo. But yeah, I agree with everything else there, Ryan.
Yeah, the Latavius Murray potentially beating out Damian Harris thing is just more fuel on the James Cook fire for me, in my opinion. But yeah, so yeah, that's kind of my thought on that.
Yeah, I thought I would be drafting some Damian Harris coming into the offseason, and I haven't. So, all right. You got any receivers that you're looking to fade here in the AFC East, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to fade a receiver. All of these receivers are very kind of feast or famine in this division. They're either the guys that no one's really arguing shouldn't be at the top of drafts, or they're much further down the board, and it's kind of lame to take a stance against a player being drafted in like round 9. But I'm going to do it because it's Alan Lazard, and I'll always take a stance against Alan Lazard. So I just don't see how he's much different from Corey Davis. I understood Alan Lazard a little bit, back when we thought Corey Davis was a big cut candidate, but it seems like the Jets are hanging on to him. Assumedly Aaron Rodgers likes him. I'd imagine that was at least part of that decision on that contract. We know that Alan Lazard's a really good blocker. I wouldn't be all that surprised if Alan Lazard is used more as a blocker, and while Davis is the one that is running the nearly 100% route share on the outside opposite of Garrett Wilson. And I mean, I think Corey Davis is probably a better player than Alan Lazard. Like, just look at last year. That was the golden opportunity of Alan Lazard's career, and he gave us still under a 20% target share, wide receiver 42 per game with nobody except rookies around him, and he still couldn't capitalize on that, even being like the only guy that Aaron Rodgers liked. I don't know if people remember like the Alan Lazard wide receiver one hype that was relentless every single week out of training camp last year. I don't think we've really gotten to a point with any wide receiver that was so undeserving of that yet this year. I guess we'll see, but at that point, I understand he's going late, but just where's the upside? I'll take a Nico Collins. I'll take a Jerick McKinnon in case the Chiefs decide to use him as a bell cow in the fantasy playoffs like they have the last 2 years. I'll even take a Jacoby Myers if I really just want the targets. So that, yeah, I just finding ways to dump on Alan Lazard, of course.
Yeah, I think you're praying for like 7 or so touchdowns if you take Lazard. That's about the upside there. I agree. I would rather take in his range Juju Smith-Schuster, Romeo Doubs, Jacoby Myers, maybe even talk me into Rondale Moore. Like, I think I'd rather take shots on these guys. I mean, they've got Mecole Hardman there for the Jets too. Like, they've got a lot of options. They've got a couple average tight ends. They've got tons of running backs. Like, yeah, I don't see the path for Lazard. So, okay. Let's get on to my tight end fade. I am going to be the Debbie Downer on the rookie and go with Dalton Kincaid here. I've been kind of surprised how much hype he's getting. I know it's the Bills. I know they've said lots of great things about how they're going to use him, but Dalton Kincaid is going tight end 11 and underdog in the 120 or so range. Just obviously there's the whole rookie tight end thing. We rarely see rookie tight ends produce. It's just a tough division to learn. I would rather just punt the position if I am in the Dalton Kincaid range, and I take a 3-round discount and get Sam Laporta for the Lions if you really want to chase a rookie. Like, I just, where Dalton Kincaid's going, I'm just never drafting him. The Bills talk a lot about how versatile he is and how they're going to use him that way, but he needs to be a good blocker to cause these matchup problems. Like, he needs to be an actual tight end that they're afraid of in the run game, and that's just a lot to learn in year one for a rookie tight end. So, if he's not a good blocker, not a good pass catcher right off the bat, I think he's basically a slower slot receiver in this offense year one. And, Stephon Diggs last year, 154 targets, Gabe Davis, 93. The rest of the Bills wide receivers, they only saw 116 total targets. So he's going to have to get about 80 targets to come close to cracking like a top 12 tight end season, unless he just scores a bunch of touchdowns. So I just don't really see how it happens on Kincaid. Maybe he's the next Kelsey and I miss it, but I'm not drafting him. He's still got to compete with Dawson Knox. Like, it just, all this, Ryan, feels like an awful lot for a rookie tight end.
Yeah, agreed completely. I mean, and we don't even know if he's going to play like in 11 personnel. Like, it could absolutely be Dawson Knox playing in those situations. I'm sure the Bills will run more 12 this year than they have before. But I mean, especially like in the start of the season, we've seen this so many times where the highly drafted, exciting rookie tight end is getting all the camp buzz and the veteran is playing over him in week one. Like, that's, And even not just in week one, like this can absolutely be a tight end by committee the entire year. I don't think the Bills have fallen out of love with Dawson Knox at all. So, yeah, I just don't really see the upside at all. Like, if I'm taking a rookie tight end this year, I'm actually taking the guy that I know is playing an every down role with the starters, and that's actually Luke Musgrave. I don't see that big of a difference between how, aside from the overall offense, I guess, how you project Luke Musgrave versus Dalton Kincaid or even like Sam Laporta or Michael Mayer this year. Like, I don't think any of them should have expectations that are that different. And of course, Dalton Kincaid is by far the most expensive. So yeah, completely out. Give me the year two tight ends. Don't give me Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah. And I do think there's a chance that come fantasy playoff time, he has a big week, but I think it's more likely that you're going to be able to get him on waivers at some point than it is you're going to draft him and start him from day one. So definitely like the talent for dynasty, just not year one and redraft for me. So, all right. I think we nailed that division pretty well. We went through just about everyone. Let's get into the 2 minute drill here, Ryan. We're going to go through some over unders on season win totals. This was on FanDuel as of last week, August 9th. I don't think too much has changed. None of these running backs should swing the lines. I would certainly hope not. So don't go out and bet the Pats because they signed Ezekiel Elliott, everyone, please. So let's start with the Buffalo Bills, Ryan. Their win total is 10.5 wins. Are you taking the over or the under on the Bills?
I think I take the over here very hesitatingly. I think in Buffalo, they kind of understand, like, this is their chance. This is their year. Like, the clock is kind of running out on a lot of these guys' contracts right now. This is their Super Bowl window. I would, like, again, what sucks about over-unders in the preseason is this is, like, it really, what it really says is Josh Allen going to stay healthy all year?
Right.
So, I mean, I'll lean towards Josh Allen plays 15 games and they go over 10.5. There's not like a strong conviction there. If this weren't just for the podcast, I wouldn't be saying, oh, I have to bet one side or another of this line. I think it's pretty efficient.
This division plays the AFC West and NFC East, so tough schedule. I mean, I know it depends on how things go in Denver, maybe, and Washington, a few places, but that's at least four tough matchups there. Plus this division, I mean, I don't know how you predict these division games. It's going to be a tough one. So I think it's a tough schedule overall for the Bills. I'm going to take the over because this has been a top five offense and defense last couple seasons, but it's not going to be easy. They're going to have some battles here. I will take the over. I feel relatively confident in it, but I agree. It's a tough schedule, and obviously health is a big part of it. So let's get on to the Dolphins. Their over under is 9.5 wins. Pretty even on both sides of the betting. So where are you going to take here? Are you going to take over? You hyped up Tua quite a bit.
I did, yeah. So at that point, I feel like I have you, but it is the issue is like there are these divisional games you have to figure out. Like this is a really, really tough division. The Dolphins defense, I'm not quite as confident in. So I mean, I could see the Dolphins being like at an offensively impressive but kind of ugly overall 9 wins. So if I have like a tiny lean, it's to the under, but I think this is a very efficient line and it's not one that I would be recommending people bet. This isn't like you're going to print money on this line.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm going under. Their quote unquote easy games are home against Denver, home against Carolina, home against the Raiders, home against the Titans. Like, even that's not, I mean, you look at some of these other division schedules and there's some cakewalks. So I don't know. I think it's a tough schedule. I'm a little worried about Tua's health. So I'm going under, but there's a couple of teams in this division. Like, I'm going to take the under on, but if you told me they won the Super Bowl, I wouldn't be all that surprised. So I think there's a wide range of outcomes in this division, but give me the under on 9.5 for the Dolphins. So let's go to the New England Patriots, 7.5 wins. Looks like everyone's betting the under here. What about you, Ryan?
I'm there as well. And I mean, part of it is their schedule for the first four games. And I mean, it's always going to be brutal in this division, but especially with how the matchup shook out. The Patriots get the Eagles, the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Cowboys in the first month of the season. That's probably 0-4. I'm going to be real. If that's 1-3, I'm like ecstatic as a Pats fan. So I'm going the under there. It's really, really, really hard to pick out eight wins on the schedule. I don't know, like the Commanders, I guess. The Broncos, maybe. The Colts, I guess. Like there's not a whole lot of locked in wins here, and this is a team that's been giving away games that they shouldn't be the last 2 years or so, and obviously that has not been what the Patriots have been known for in the last 20 years. So I still think there's maybe a little bit too much a little too much credence being given to Bill Belichick still by the Vegas odds makers.
Yeah, the schedule's tough. Even a couple of the games they drew just from how they finished in the division. I mean, the Saints, that's not easy. That's kind of two similar teams. They drew the Steelers. Like, that's going to be a battle. So, yeah, it's a really tough schedule. I'm really tempted to take the over if it's really like negative 140 on the under. That's pretty big. But I'm going under on 7.5 wins. I do think they've got an awfully good defense, though. And I don't see them going much below 6 or 7 wins. So it's going to be close. But give me the under on the Patriots. I'm going a lot of unders in this division. So let's get on to the New York Jets. They are 9.5. Actually, a kind of, I don't know, responsible win total, I feel like. I'm surprised the hype's not higher on the Jets right now. So where are you going with this one, Ryan?
Yeah, I like the over here. I mean, the Jets could have arguably the best defense in the NFL this year. If there's any argument against Aaron Rodgers for fantasy football, it's that he may not have to air it out that much. Like the Jets could just be beating teams 17-0 through a lot of this year. So, I like the over here. This is probably the, maybe aside from Patriots under, this is the team I feel, the call I feel second best about in this division.
It's a tough schedule. I mean, it starts out Buffalo, Dallas, Patriots, Chiefs, Broncos, Eagles before the bye. So there's a lot of tough games on the schedule, a lot of night games. I mean, they're playing Thursday, December 28th, Thursday night in Cleveland. Like it's I'm going the under. It's kind of a cop out because I think there's enough chance that Rodgers gets hurt. There's enough chance that we get some, you know, Denver Broncos part two where we saw Russell Wilson kind of flame out, changing teams. So there's enough like stuff that I think could blow up here, and I'm taking the under. But kind of like the Dolphins for me, I would not be surprised if they were competing to go to the Super Bowl either. So I think there's a lot of variance personally on the Jets and the Dolphins, and I don't think win total is the way I would probably bet them, but I'm going to take the under for these purposes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense too. Like, I think Rodgers can go into some of those teams and like win in prime time in a duel. Like, I think he still has that in him. Like, that wouldn't shock me at all. Like, the Jets could go 2-2 in the first four games and be looking pretty decent. I just don't see that at all with the Patriots. So that's kind of explains the difference in feelings there.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get to four downs with our guest. Drew set this up for some of our guests from outside of QB List. And, you know, I've talked to Ryan an awful lot, but hey, maybe I'll learn some new stuff here. So let's get into question number one, Ryan. When did you start playing fantasy football? And do you have like a star that stands out on your first squad or just someone who won you some money in the first couple seasons?
Yeah. So my first year playing fantasy football would have been 2015. The guys on my team that year would have been that was the year that almost every running back tore their ACL. It was like the running back apocalypse, I remember it was being termed. So I was the one lucky person that drafted Adrian Peterson that year. He was like the only running back in the first round to pay off his ADP. And I must have also had Todd Gurley that year. I think that was the year that Todd Gurley got drafted was like a mid-round pick and really turned it on at the end of the year. And it was also David Johnson's rookie year when he was the RB1 over like the last 4 weeks and won everybody their playoff matchup. So I think I had all three of those guys on my first ever fantasy team. So that obviously won a championship that year. It was a really, really good memories there. So yeah, that it's crazy. I can't believe I had that formative experience. And now I'm the guy out that's like out here drafting zero RB. I don't know what happened to me.
Yeah, I distinctly remember that Gurley season of the Jeff Fisher year, just running into the line over and over, but then he would just break one like light speed through the line for like 60 yards. It was a lot of fun to watch. So, all right. Question two, timely question, because we're hiring staff writers currently at QB List. So shoot us an email, info@QBList.com, or reach out to us on Twitter or whatever. But Ryan, how long have you been producing fantasy football content and how did you get your start?
So I... also kind of an interesting story. So when I was in high school, I don't know if this is a thing like all over the country, but I had to do basically a senior project where you have to spend however many hours doing a completely new skill, something you've never done before. So I decided my senior project was going to be writing about fantasy football. So I was like, had my own little like micro blog. I was posting my articles on Reddit every week. I was writing up, I wrote up like one waiver guy every week or something like that. And I kind of had fun with it. It was a fun senior project. Wasn't thinking really that much of it after the season ended. And then Nick Pollock randomly reached out to me like in Reddit DMs and said, "Hey, like I read some of your stuff on the fantasy football subreddit last season, and I really liked it. Like, we're hiring staff writers at QB List. Would you be interested in doing this?" And I, from there, I ended up being at QB List for the next however many years. So that was how I got my start. It was, yeah, kind of a funny story.
Yeah. And now, what podcast wise, did you start on Waiver Wire and then come on over to Sit Start? Is that right? The years are blended together.
Yeah, I started on Waiver Wire, and then ended up moving over to Sit Start with you guys a couple years ago. Those three man podcasts with Miles were something. That was like, we joke about, we podcast for way too long. When it was three of us and you and me were both like trying to get takes off in like into Miles's face. Oh man, we were getting close to 2 hours, I'm sure, on some of those shows.
Yeah, Miles would try to blame us, but he certainly got some of his takes in too, so it wasn't all our fault. So, all right, question three. Did you get away for any vacations this summer? Anything planned coming up, or have you just been in front of the spreadsheets for the entire length of the warm weather this year?
A lot of spreadsheets for sure. Some like small little excursions here or there. It's nice being in New Hampshire. Like, there's beaches and nature and mountains everywhere around you, so it's easy to get away for a weekend. This fall, I was planning a trip to Maui. Obviously, there's been like a really, really awful wildfire there. It's just horrible tragedy. I really just... all the best to everybody on the island with them rebuilding. I don't know what the status of my vacation is. That doesn't really matter though. So I really hope that life can eventually go back to something resembling normal there.
Yeah. I've got a buddy that lives in Hawaii. I always forget which island, but he's luckily in the kind of rainforest area where that fire did not happen. But yeah, I hope everyone's doing well out there. Hopefully they can rebound pretty quick. So, all right. Question number four, not so much a question, Ryan, but just time to plug anything you're working on, where you're working, where can they follow you? What do you got coming? Just, what have you been up to?
Yeah, so I've been writing my tail off at fantasypoints.com. Lots of really fun articles I've done this offseason. I did a huge one on age curves. I did a really interesting one on first read targets and first read target share. That's like a unique stat that we have in our new Fantasy Points data product that you should also check out. I believe you can still try it free for a week if you sign up. But just some really cool stuff with like how quarterbacks are performing differently on first reads versus on checkdowns, and which receivers are most reliant on being the first read and perform worse if they're not. So really cool stuff there. I have a series coming out soon about players that have league breaking upside, and those should all be dropping before the season, hopefully end of August ish. We're still working through that a little bit. So, and you, as always, you can find me on Twitter, getting mad online about Ramondre Stevenson at QBL Ryan. So if for some reason you haven't heard enough from me on this podcast, you can just go there and see all of my unfiltered thoughts.
Yeah, I saw you do the Age Cliffs podcast with Josh Norris and Hayden Winks for Underdog. So that was awesome. As a best ball degenerate, I'm sure that was a highlight of the offseason. So been really excited to see everything you're doing, and appreciate you joining us. I'm sure you'll be back one day or another. But we're really excited for you over there at Fantasy Points. So keep up the good work. So I think that about wraps up this podcast. Just a little over an hour, Ryan, just not typical, but we just released our first What We Saw of the Season at QB List. So you can go there and check out our thoughts from all the preseason games. We're really trying to put some stuff up top so you can cut through all the preseason madness and just get the important takeaways. So check out our What We Saw on the site. We kind of got out of order on the divisional previews, but we got some more coming real soon. We got some awesome guests coming up, so we're going to keep that going. So other than that, yeah, just stay tuned. We'll be on Reddit August 19th for an AMA, so feel free to join us there and ask away. Lots of stuff coming up. Drafts are here soon. Lots of good stuff in the works. So follow me at Eric Smith QBL and the site at the QB List, and we will talk to you again soon.